the rest of the story. Harry was not yet 14, and he'd already been bitten by the show business bug. An excellent boy soprano, he had teamed up incongruously with a burlesque queen and had run away from home to New York City to appear on stage as an extra at the Herald Square Theater. Now Harry was on the road touring with an Irish tenor, Fred Moore. They billed themselves as introducers and promoters of high-class ballads and popular songs, and they were a hit. In Baltimore, audiences cheered. Offers came from far and wide. For a while, it seemed as though the Irish tenor and the lad with the silken voice were a permanent duo. Destiny decreed otherwise. After a tantalizing few weeks of success, there came a day when Harry opened his mouth to sing and nothing came out. All of the beautiful high notes of which Harry was so proud were gone. His middle and lower range had been reduced to a frog-like croak. Harry's once glorious 13-year-old voice, as they say, had changed. Needless to add, Harry left the act without his talent as a singer. He was just another stage-struck boy at a time when the world was glutted with talentless stage-struck boys. His show business career apparently ended. Harry returned to New York. By day, he walked aimlessly about the city, and at night, he slept on park benches. His father, back in Washington, D.C., had admonished him that the stage life was a sinful one. Perhaps the loss of his gifted voice was his punishment for having desired such a career. But now there was nothing left for Harry but to return home with his tail between his legs and admit that Dad was right. But this is the rest of the story. Young Harry, the once aspiring singer whose voice had fallen victim to adolescence, did return home. And when he arrived, he was greeted by many I-told-you-sos. Harry had misused his remarkable gift, and now it was gone. Perhaps he'd learned his lesson. Solemnly, Harry assured his father he had. No more theater, no more show business. Harry would work hard at whatever profession his father deemed fit. It was Harry's brother, Hirsch, who rekindled the boy's desire to perform. Hirsch explained that singing wasn't all there was. What did it matter that Harry's youthful voice had changed? The two brothers could form a team. Though perhaps not as well as his brother had sung, Hirsch could sing. What if instead of singing, Harry would whistle? It would give the act variety. Why not give it a try? At first, the idea was entirely unappealing to Harry. Having been burned once in show business, he was not eager to be burned once more. But when the footlights shine in your eyes, they shine forever. And eventually, Harry agreed to join his brother as a whistler. As a whistler. That Harry soon became the best whistler in the business is vaudeville history. For this was a talent-turned trademark acquired of necessity, which Harry would never neglect. Even after his adolescence had passed and maturity had restored to him a singing voice. You will never forget his inimitable rendition of Toot Toot Tootsie, in part because of the masterful whistling which Harry incorporated in the song. Well, now you know how the whistling got there. And how a boy who had chosen the stage name of Harry allowed his brother to use that name instead. And Harry, the lad who whistled when he lost his voice, became Al. The lad who whistled when he had lost his voice became Al Jolson. And now you know the rest of the story.